Nếu như
globalization to a large extent is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera, poročamo o južni polovni.
Za barikadami ali realno obstoječi anarhosindikalizem na belih planinah Bolivije. Bolivijski zunani minister Fernando Aramayo in notranji minister Marco Oviedo sta februarja za bolivijske medije ločeno potrdila, da je ameriški urad za boj proti drogam, poznan kot DEA, ponovno začel delovati v Boliviji. To je prvi večji rušilni napad na dosežke prejšnjih vlad stranke Gibanje za socializem. Urad je leta 2008 izgnal takratni predsednik Evo Morales, toda različna krila njegove skoraj 20 let vladajoče stranke so se v zadnjem letu in pol dobesedno stepla med sabo in kar je od stranke ostalo, je na tako predsedniških kot parlamentarnih volitvah propadlo. Oblast je po volitvah prevzel desničar Rodrigo Paz iz krščansko-demokratske stranke, ki se je na volitve podal s sloganom Kapitalizem za vse, ne le za peščico.
Predprejšnji predsednik Evo Morales pa je 5 dni po ameriški ugrabitvi venezuelskega predsednika Nicolasa Madura in hkrati z začetkom preletov helikopterjev urada za boj proti drogam nad provinco Chapare, kjer prebiva, za mesec in pol izginil iz javnosti. Ponovno se je pojavil v četrtek 19. februarja na predstavitvi kandidatov svoje nove stranke, imenovane Vračamo se k uboganju ljudstva, po špansko Estamos volviendo obedeciendo al pueblo, krajše Evo Pueblo za regionalne volitve.
V več kot enem mesecu umika iz javnosti se je celo prenehal javljati na svojem nedeljskem programu Evo Pueblo, vodja raje, na sindikalnem radiju Causachun Koka. Namesto tega je Evo, kot sam sebe rad naziva v tretji osebi, iz svojega skrivališča tvital o pevcu Bad Bunnyju, odstavljenem perujskem predsedniku Joseju Heriju in antiimperializmu. Njegovo izginotje je sprožilo špekulacije, ki so jih širili predvsem desničarski parlamentarci, da je spet pobegnil v Mehiko, kakor po državnem udaru leta 2019. Evo je na predstavitvi kandidatov zatrdil, da je bil samo bolan.
Morales tako ostaja pod zaščito sindikatov pridelovalcev koke, znanih kot kokalerosi v mestu Lauca Enje v provinci Chapare. Tja se je zabarikadiral konec oktobra 2024 in se tako izognil aretaciji zaradi obtožbe, da je imel otroka z mladoletnico. Preiskavo je državno tožilstvo sprožilo leta 2020 med pučistično vladavino, nalog za aretacijo pa je izdalo javno tožilstvo v Tarihi v začetku predlanskega oktobra.
Policija se je od takrat večkrat poskusila prebiti do Moralesa, kar pa so izvesti sindikati preprečevali z blokado cest v provinco, predvsem na mostovih in prelazih. Policijski poskusi deblokade cest so se končali z nekaj aretacijami sindikalistov in več ranjenimi policisti, na katere so člani sindikatov med drugim metali dinamit.
Poskusi aretacije so sledili protestnemu pohodu na prestolnico La Paz, ki ga je mesec pred tem vodil Morales, uradno zaradi gospodarske krize, za katero je okrivil predsednika Luisa Arceja. Med Moralesom in Arcejem je v tem času potekal tudi spor glede vodstva stranke in kandidature na predsedniških volitvah, čemur sta se morala na koncu oba odpovedati. Iz province Chapare, severnega dela departmaja Cochabamba z istoimenskim mestom, kjer je bil kongres evističnega krila stranke Gibanje za socializem, so sindikati po začetku protestov proti vladi predsednika Arceja policijo za 3 mesece izgnali. S tem so sindikati ponovili svojo reakcijo na vojaški udar leta 2019. Mimo grede, takrat so po izgonu policije iz province ob cestah obesili še lutke z napisi Policaj odkrit, policaj linčan.
Moralesovemu skritju je poleg nevarnosti aretacija pripomogel poskus atentata med enim od protestov. Za naročilo atentata je obtožil vlado takratnega predsednika Arceja. V odziv na poskus atentata so Moralesu zvesti sindikati pridelovalcev koke zasedli 3 vojašnice v provinci Chapare in pri tem kot talce zajeli vsaj 200 vojakov in civilistov.
Od takrat oboroženi člani sindikatov dežurajo pred Moralesovim zatočiščem v mestu Lauka Enje. Kako se je Morales tam zabarikadiral, opiše Thomas Grisafi, profesor človeške geografije na Univerzi v Sankt Galenu.
He took refuge in a place called Lauka Enje, which is the headquarters of the 6 federations. It's just off the main highway, close to a town called Shinawata, and it's a sort of sports stadium with office space and living spaces and apartments in it. It's also the home to the Cocoa's radio station, which is called Radio Causa Chunkoka. And what he did is he just called on the Cocoa's unions, his bases, to protect him. And so what happened is they have a constant vigilance of around 500 coke growers surrounding Lauka Enye. All of them are armed with wooden spears, and they're there continually. I mean, they're not the same people, they rotate, right? So every sindicato has to send, one or two people at a time, and they rotate. They do 2 or 3 days on, then they leave again, and then the next people come. And if you don't, if your local union says it's your turn to go and you don't go, then they charge you an enormous fine. So basically, he's got a ready supply of soldiers to protect him. Which is why Luis Arce was kind of unable to really enact, to administer justice and arrest him on this outstanding warrant, because had he sent troops in, it just, potentially it would have been a bloodbath. And they weren't going to, kill 20, 30 people just to get to Evo Morales. And so they just sort of had a negotiated truce. They left that and just sort of left him there being guarded. Now Paspiera is in power. There's much more pressure to arrest Morales on the part of his members of his party and sort of public figures. But it's just a very difficult thing for them to actually do, because he's so well defended.
Iz opisanega je jasno, da ima nekdani bolivijski predsednik še vedno na svoji strani zvesto in močno sindikalno gibanje, sposobno upiranja državnim represivnim organom. Način mobilizacije vojakov v teh sindikatih predstavi sogovorec.
The coke growers unions are one of the most powerful social forces in Bolivia, if not Latin America, in fact. It has 49,000 members. They cover a large territory, and they're highly organized. So the 49,000 members represent, each member represents a family. So we could say there are probably around 250,000 coca growers. And they can mobilize highly effectively. They have a hierarchical structure. So you have base level sindicatos grouped into centrales. The centrales are then grouped into federations. And in total, there are six federations. And when the six federations make a decision, they can easily mobilize all of their membership to go out to protest, to block roads, to march on cities and so on and so forth. And they can even mobilize more than 49,000 members because they sometimes insist that each union, a member, brings a plus one. So, you know, if they want, they could easily mobilize 100,000 people, no problem. And the reason they can do this is because of the kind of command and control structure they have. And if members don't mobilize once a decision has been made that that's what they will do, then they're fined. And the fines are quite significant, so it ensures compliance.
Medtem, ko se je Evo skrival, so sindikati, sicer pod vodstvom bolivijske delavske centrale, v kateri prevladuje sindikat rudarjev, izvajali blokade cest zaradi konec decembra sprejetega vladnega odloka, ki razglaša izredne razmere v gospodarstvu zaradi inflacije in pomankanja goriva. Odlok med drugim ukinja subvencije za gorivo in uvaja privatizacijo naravnih surovin. Sindikati so v času Moralesovega izginotja protestirali tudi proti predlaganemu zakonu o prepovedi cestnih blokad, s katerim želi vlada kriminalizirati eno od taktik, s katerimi sindikalisti v Boliviji uveljavljajo svoje zahteve. Blokad so se najprej posluževali rudarji, v 90-ih pa so taktiko prevzeli tudi kmečki sindikati, vključno s kokalerosi. Prav sposobnost blokiranja cest je tudi glavni vir moči sindikatov kokalerosov, ki ščitijo nekdanjega predsednika, pojasnjuje sogovornik.
The main strategy they have is blocking roads, and this is particularly effective because the main trunk road of the country that connects the largest commercial city, sort of economic hub of Bolivia, Santa Cruz, with Cochabamba and La Paz, the capital city. And so if they block that road and just, you know, they just push rocks onto it, trees onto it, and put thousands of members out there, they can literally cut the country in half. And that is the only link towards connecting east and west, and also connecting Bolivia to, you know, its main kind of trading partner, Brazil, in the east or across to sort of Chile and Peru in the west. And they can maintain these roadblocks for weeks at a time if they choose to. And there's really no way to move these people. The only way to do it is to use the security forces, but this creates violent clashes. And I guess the government is obviously very wary of the kind of violence that could spiral out of control if they're not careful. So they're hugely powerful, and that's their main sort of strategy for pushing against the government.
Provinca Čapare, kjer se skriva Morales in odkoder izvirajo opisani sindikati, leži v središču države in predstavlja severni del regije Cochabamba. Obsega 13.000 kvadratnih kilometrov in ima nekaj več kot 300.000 prebivalcev, večinoma govorcev jezika kečua. Glavni način preživljanja prebivalstva je pridelava koke. Do odprtja prelaza v 50-ih letih prejšnjega stoletja v tropski gozd, ki so ga prej zapirale gore, je bila provinca večinoma nenaseljena. Potek naseljevanja regije predstavi Grisafi.
The Chapare is located in the center of Bolivia, and it a kind of large humid tropical forest. So you're at the foot, the sort of eastern foot of the Andes. Until the 1950s, basically, it wasn't populated. It was very sparsely populated. There were a couple of like missions and a few nomadic indigenous groups, but very sparsely populated. There were no roads, few towns. There wasn't really anything going on there. The government, with US backing, built a road through the region, basically to connect to the lowland city of Santa Cruz. And at that point, what happened is people from the highlands who didn't have where the main cities and mining centers and agricultural centers were. And they, you know, people were landless. They started making the most of this road and spontaneously settling the land. So what they did is they just went down and claimed land, you know, without any legal documents or paying for the land. They could just take it. It was the Amazon. It was this kind of untouched frontier. And initially, these sort of the process of migration from the highlands down to the lowlands was very slow, but it really sped up in the 1980s because of the expansion in demand for cocaine from North America and later Europe. This meant that coca became a highly valuable crop. So the price of coca went through the roof. And so at that point, which coincided with a moment of economic crisis in Bolivia, thousands of people traveled to the region and started claiming land, planting coca, and later processing cocaine paste, which is a first step to making refined cocaine. And so you had massive, sort of a very rapid expansion in population and coca acreage in the 1980s.
Kmetje so v čapare prišli pred državo. Razdeljevanje zemlje med seboj so tako organizirali preko svojih sindikatov. Preko sindikatov so s časoma vzpostavili tudi javne ustanove, kot so šole in bolnišnice, ter celo milico s preprostim orožjem. Sindikati organizirajo tudi javna dela. V mestih in večjih vaseh si lastijo in upravljajo tržnico za trgovanje s koko, ki jo je v Čaparu zasadila večina prišlekov. Sindikati pridelovalcev koke so tako postali de facto država v Čaparu.
Why are these unions existing in the Chapari? Well, when the people first began settling the region back in the 50s and 60s, there was no state presence. That means, you know, there were no courthouses, there were no police, there were no schools, there were no roads. And so people had to sort of do these things on their own. And so what they did is they organized themselves into self-governing units called sindicatos, or sort of grassroots unions. And they set out together as a group into the jungle to claim land. And these sindicatos initially were really intended to allocate land and control land tenure, but eventually they became the de facto governing authorities. They effectively became a state within a state. And the sindicatos, out of necessity, had to work with neighboring sindicatos because they were opening out their own roads. They built their own roads. They built their own schools. They administered their own justice. They have their own police force. And they gradually worked together and scaled up. And that's how you got this kind of a hierarchical structure of federations linking up to the six federations and controlling this massive territory.
Tudi po vzpostavitvi državnih institucij v regiji sindikalna prevlada nad družbeno organizacijo ostaja. Uradne institucije delujejo kot njihov podaljšek. Naprimer, župani v Čaparu so dejansko izvoljeni na sindikalnih sestankih, občinske volitve pa sledijo zgolj kot formalnost, saj člani potem glasujejo v skladu z dogovorom. Pred volitvami lahko znotraj sindikata poteka celo generalka, na kateri se člani prepričajo, kako oddati veljavno glasovnico in katero ime na lističu obkrožiti, da ne bi kdo od slabše pismenih članov glasoval na robe. V nekaterih primerih sindikati državo popolnoma zaobidejo. V okviru sindikata tako lokalna skupnost izvoli šerifa, ki skupaj s prostovoljci na mesto pogojno tolerirane policije opravlja patrulje v kraju. Sindikalni sestanki služijo tudi reševanju sporov na mesto sodišč, na primer v postopkih ločitve ali dedovanja, v zemljiških sporih, razsojajo med drugim tudi o tožbah zaradi nasilja v družini. Članstvo v sindikatu je še vedno pogoj za pridobitev zemlje v provinci. Navznotr so sindikati načeloma organizirani kot konsenzna demokracija. Odločitve sindikati sprejemajo na mesečnih za javnost zaprtih sestankih članstva, na katerih je udeležba obvezna. Po doseženem konsenzu pa sindikati odločitve strogo uveljavljajo sredstvi prisile, ki poleg glob vključujejo družbeno koristno delo, telesne kazni, oduzem pravice do pridelovanja koke in prisilno prodajo zemlje, kar lahko pomeni izgon iz Čapara. No tenía dinero, me llamaban Nicolás, que no tengo nada, me dicen Colas nomás. Colas, Colas, Colas y Nicolás, lo mucho que te quiero... Uradno članstvo sindikatov sestavljajo predvsem moške glave družin, ki so tudi lastniki zemlje. Nekateri zaposlujejo delavce, ki se lahko na sindikalnih sestankih pojavijo v njihovem imenu. Včlenitev v sindikat poteka po poznanstvih. Novi člani so praviloma sorodniki ali prijatelji starih članov. Na ta način se izognejo infiltratorjem.
Okrog 1000 sindikatov, združenih v 6 federacij, ima skoraj 50 tisoč članov, ki predstavljajo približno toliko družin. Ženska manjšina poroča, da je na sestankih deležna mansplaininga in neupoštevanja. Poleg tega na sestankih moški praviloma sedijo na klopeh, ženske pa na tleh. Za moški šovinizem nekoliko kompenzirajo s paralelnimi ženskimi sveti in organizacijami znotraj federacij. Posebnih ženskih sindikatov, osnovne enote znotraj sindikalnih federacij, še vedno ni.
Sindikati imajo voljene šefe, ki morajo izvajati na sestankih konsenzno sprejete odločitve članov in voditi sindikalne akcije. Volitve vodstva, ki na nivoju federacij potekajo enkrat na 2 leti, na nivoju sindikatov pa enkrat letno, so prevzete od rudarjev, ki so v čapare migrirali v 80-ih. Predtem so se sindikati posluževali rotacij vodstva.
V 90-ih letih prejšnjega stoletja, kmalu po prihodu rudarjev, je v Boliviji začel delovati ameriški urad za boj proti drogam. Provinca Čapare se je militarizirala in enote militarizirane policije, ki so jih financirale in izurile Združene države, so nasilno vdirale na domačije in ročno uničevale nasade koke. Poleg tega, da so kmete pustili brez dohodka, so se represivni organi nad njimi izživljali, kar je vključevalo kraje, ustrahovanja, aretacije brez naloga, posilstva in umore.
Prej do države kolaboracionistični sindikati so se takrat začeli upirati. Pridelovanje koke ima v Andih namreč dolgo tradicijo, povezano z njeno rabo v tradicionalnih staroselskih ritualih. Iz koke andski staroselci pripravljajo tudi čaj. Žvečenje kokinih listov je značilna praksa bolivijskih fizičnih delavcev. Koka v tem primeru služi kot poživilo med delom, predvsem pa je koka za mnogo kmetov edina ekonomsko vzdržna poljščina. Njena nezakonitost na tujih trgih dviguje ceno, poleg tega jo lahko žanjajo do 4-krat na leto. Razloge za ekonomsko odvisnost prebivalstva Čapara od koke podrobneje pojasni Grisafi.
The region is highly dependent on coca. That's the mainstay of the local economy. There are other elements that are increasingly important, but nothing can really compete with coca. Planting coca is a rational choice on the part of farmers because, well, for many reasons. Remember, you're in a landlocked country that has a poor road network, and so exporting sort of bananas or papaya to international markets isn't really feasible. These are products that perish, they get bumped around and damaged. So then there's limited markets for tropical fruit and accessibility to international markets. And domestically, the prices for these goods are very, very low. So, you know, farmers have found that if they grow oranges, for example, and then they load them into a truck, you know, 15,000 oranges to take them to the city to sell, sometimes the amount they spend on gasoline on hiring the truck is actually more than what they earn back from selling the oranges. It just makes no sense. Meanwhile, coca, it's, you know, it grows very easily. It can be harvested 3 or 4 times a year, which means that you have a regular source of income. It's not like coffee where you harvest it once and then you get one payday. You know, here you get 3 or 4 paydays per year. It's highly resilient to pests. It has a higher price per hectare than any other crop. And most importantly, there's always a guaranteed market for it. Now, much of the coca produced in the Chapari is transported directly to the big city in the east called Santa Cruz, where it's used for sort of traditional consumption. So people chew it, people prepare teas, people use it in divination and religious celebrations and ritual acts. But of course, also a significant part of the crop also goes directly to maceration pits to be transformed into cocaine-based paste.
Interese od pridelovanja koke odvisnih kmetov zastopajo prej predstavljeni sindikati. Iz teh sindikatov pa prihaja Morales, ki se je v politiko vključil prav kot vodja sindikalnega upora proti zatiranju kokalerosov.
Morales. Pripadnik ljudstva Aymara iz Orura se je v Čapare preselil konec 70-ih, se vključil v lokalne sindikalne strukture in se sčasoma povzpel do vodstvenih funkcij. Leta 1988 je Skupščina federacij Tropico, največje od šestih sindikalnih federacij, Moralesa izvolila za izvršnega sekretarja, torej vodjo federacije. Pod Moralesom so se taktike in zahteve sindikatov radikalizirale. Zahtevali so konec izkoreninjanja koke, spremembe antinarkotične zakonodaje in demilitarizacijo Čapara. Sindikati so začeli z zasedbami trgov in blokiranjem cest. Ustanovili so tudi straže, oborožene starimi puškami iz vojne za Čako in doma narejenimi minami. Njihova vloga je bila predvsem odvračevalna, dejanski spopadi z represivnimi organi so bili redki. Morales je takrat začel s protestnimi pohodi na prestolnico. Vzpon Moralesa v sindikatih povzame sogovorec.
He first became responsible for sports of his local union as a teenager. He was clearly a very good leader and very charismatic and very smart, and he quickly rose through the ranks until in around 1988 he became the general secretary of the largest federation in the tropics, in the Cochabamba tropics, the Chapari, and eventually the head of the six federations too. And his kind of rise to prominence within the union coincided with more aggressive policing from the state attacking coca growers, so US-backed coca eradication programs and interdiction of drug laboratories and that kind of thing. And the coca growers, this was, you know, an attack on their livelihoods, and the US wasn't offering them a whole lot in terms of development assistance. And so they fought to maintain the right to grow coca. And that's kind of catapulted Evo Morales to national prominence. And that's how he kind of became this sort of national figure, very powerful social force. That's why now he's in the Chapari, because that's where he's from. That's where his bases always were. He's a leader of the Chapari Coca Growers Union. And even as president, so he became president in 2006 through a political party that was set up originally by the Coca Growers Unions called the Movement Towards Socialism. So even as president of the country, he still maintained close contacts with the coca growers unions and would regularly travel there, attend their meetings, and listen to their concerns and implement policies that came from the grassroots.
Leto po prevzemu vodenja največje sindikalne federacije je Evo podprl ustanovitev parlamentarnega krila šestih federacij kot alternativo gverilskemu uporu. Leta 1995 je Kongres Združene sindikalne federacije kmečkih delavcev izglasoval ustanovitev stranke. Organizacijo, ki so jo takrat ustanovili, so definirali kot politični instrument ljudskega gibanja. Razumeli so jo kot podrejen podaljšek sindikatov v parlamentarni politiki. Sprva so politični instrument poimenovali Skupščina za suverenost ljudstev. Končno ime Gibanje za socializem, s kratico MAS, so si nadeli potem, ko se je Morales za prevzem imena dogovoril z voditeljem propadle falangistične stranke, ki je to ime že registrirala, saj je registracijo Skupščine Nacionalna volilna komisija zavračala.
Na parlamentarnih volitvah leta 2005 po vstaji sindikatov proti privatizaciji zemeljskega plina in odstopu predsednika Carlosa Mese je Gibanje za socializem prvič osvojilo večino, Morales pa je z njim zmagal na predsedniških volitvah. Dan pred predsedniško inauguracijo je bil ceremonialno okronan še za Apu Malkuja oziroma kralja staroselske skupnosti Aymara, katere pripadnik je.
Tudi po prevzemu predsedstva in kraljestva je ostal generalni sekretar šestih federacij. To bi glede na načela organizacije sindikalnih federacij vsaj v teoriji moralo pomeniti njegovo podrejenost željam kokalerosov. Politiko do koke, ki jo je na to vodil kot vodja političnega instrumenta sindikatov, predstavi Grisafi.
The Chapari Coca Growers Unions really kind of emerged in sort of became national political actors in the defense of coca back in the 1980s and 1990s. And then eventually they got their guy in power, Evo Morales, in 2006. Now, Evo Morales, when he came to power, obviously, you know, he was a coca grower leader. He emerged from the coca growers unions, and really the party he represented the movement towards socialism, you know, emerged from those unions. So he had to come up with a whole new policy regarding coca. He couldn't continue with the US-backed forced eradication. And so what he did is he developed this rather innovative strategy called coca yes, cocaine no. And the idea was to revalue the coca leaf and sort of put value on its cultural and economic significance for legal uses, like to prepare tea, like to celebrate the coa, which is an offering to Pachamama, and to produce a whole range of legal goods like panettones, toothpaste and liquor for export. That was the idea. And then so to sort of have legal coca cultivation for those uses, but then to heavily penalize cocaine production, and that would be totally illegal. And so what he did is he allowed coca growers in the Chapare have a limited amount of coca known as a cato. So basically it's a plot that measures 40 meters by 40 meters, and each registered union member was allowed one cato each, totaling about 7,700 hectares in the Chapare. And what he did is he totally demilitarized the region, and he handed control of this program, so to ensure that the union members didn't violate this agreement, he handed it over to the unions to run. So there was oversight from a state agency called UDESTRO, which itself was staffed by coca growers, but really it was the unions who were responsible for monitoring their own sort of, you know, members to ensure that no one had more than one cato.
Poleg omejene legalizacije koke je vlada tudi spodbujala kmete k razvoju drugih poljščin, česar se je lotila bolj realistično kot prejšnje desničarske vlade, ki so sodelovale z ameriškim uradom za boj proti drogam.
What they also did is they front-loaded development assistance to the region. So in the past, in the 90s and the early 2000s, when USAID was operating in the region, they would offer development assistance, you know, encouraging people to grow other crops like palm heart or do fish farming, things like this. But they would only offer you that assistance once you destroyed your coca leaf. Now, this didn't really work because, of course, you destroy your coca leaf, you immediately lose your main source of income. And it might take 1, 2, or even 3 years for the next crop to start yielding results, for the plants to mature. And so all of these projects led by USAID, they all basically failed. They also made no effort to open up new markets. In contrast, what the Morales government did is they front-loaded development assistance. So everyone was allowed a bit of coca, and they invested heavily in the region. And they did what they call integrated development. So they didn't just sort of, you know, offer one farmer, I don't know, some plants, like banana plants, and say, okay, grow bananas. What they did is they invested in roads, in expanding the education system, in improving healthcare. They even built many factories in the region to actually process agricultural products directly there, so you could get value added in the region. So they built a paper factory, honey packaging plant, fruit juice processing factory, a fish processing factory, all of these things so they could make products in the region for export. They also built a coca processing factory to make these kind of legal coca-based products.
Moralesovo politiko do koke in kokaina lahko torej razumemo kot iskanje ravnotežja med interesi svoje baze, ki ga je pripeljala na oblast, in potrebi po prilagajanju državnemu in mednarodnemu sistemu po vstopu v parlamentarno politiko. To se je kazalo tudi v spremembi retorike gibanja. Ta je koko začela legitimirati identitetno, kot tradicijo staroselskih ljudstev, pomembno za njihov način življenja in rituale, namesto da bi še naprej koko zagovarjali z vidika razreda kot vir preživetja kmetov in zaradi njene specifične rabe med delavci. Zaradi navezovanja na staroselsko nacionalno identiteto in navskrižja zahtevami Združenih držav je legalizacija koke v času vladavine Eva Moralesa postala vprašanje suverenosti in dekolonizacije Bolivije. Sogovorec ocenjuje, da je bila Moralesova politika legalizacije in nadzora koke uspešna, čeprav so nadzor v Čaparu izvajali sindikati pridelovalcev sami.
Of course, for a lot of people looking at this from the outside, they would say, well, letting the coca growers grow coca and having the coca unions monitor it seems ridiculous. It might be like the mice guarding the cheese. But in point of fact, the UNODC, which is the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, the monitoring teams registered a decline of coca cultivation in the region until 2015. And then back in 2014, I think Bolivia had around 20,000 hectares. That was by far the lowest amount of coca of the three main coca producing nations, Peru, Bolivia, and Colombia. And after that, it climbed slightly, climbing more significantly after Morales was out of power. So basically, this collaborative model was very successful. It successfully kept a cap on coca cultivation. It reduced, well, basically stopped human rights violations associated with the forced eradication of coca crops, and it allowed peasant farmers to sort of expand and diversify their farms. It gave them the opportunity. With that safety net, they would then take the risk of investing in new kinds of legal crops and fish farming and things like this. So it was a really kind of successful model.
V času vladanja stranke MAS se je razmerje moči med njo in sindikalnimi federacijami začelo obračati in sindikati so postali bolj podrejeni Moralesu osebno. Pomenljiv incident se je zgodil leta 2015, ko je Moralesu uspelo nastaviti lastnega kandidata za župana mesta Šinaota kljub nasprotovanju 500 kokalirosov, ki so takratnega predsednika za nekaj ur celo zaprli v lokalni štab sindikata. Del disidentskih sindikalistov je nato ustanovil lastno stranko za volitve. Vodstvo šestih federacij se je postavilo na stran predsednika države proti bazi. Voditelje Punta je vodstvo iz sindikata izključilo in jim uničilo nasade koke, policija pa jih je aretirala zaradi ogrožanja življenja predsednika. Glede na govorice je Morales voditeljem federacij obljubil državne službe, če se postavijo na njegovo stran. Člani sindikatov so večinoma verjeli, da je pogojevanje državnih služb in funkcij glavno sredstvo vlade za podrejanje sindikalnih voditeljev. Ta podrejenost se je kazala tudi v organizaciji shodov v podporo zakonodajnim predlogom vlade, seveda z obvezno udeležbo, kar je spodkopalo zaupanje v instrumentalnost gibanja za socializem.
Moralesova vladavina se je končala z vojaškim udarom po njegovi zmagi na predsedniških volitvah 2019, ko je prvič iskal luknje v ustavni omejitvi mandatov. Po udaru je oblast prevzela desničarka Jeanine Áñez, ki je pod stavkami in blokadami zdržala 11 mesecev. Na volitvah, ki so sledile padcu počistke, je na mesto izgnanega Moralesa kandidiral njegov protežiranec in nekdanji minister za gospodarstvo Luis Arce. Morales se je po Arcejevi izvolitvi vrnil iz izgnanstva v Mehiki in z novo izvoljenim predsednikom začel spor glede vodenja stranke in kandidature na naslednjih predsedniških volitvah.
Morales je trdil, da ustava omejuje zaporedno število mandatov, ne pa skupno število, kar bi mu po pauzi enega mandata omogočilo zakonito ponovno kandidaturo. Ustavno sodišče je decembra 2024 dokončno odločilo, da ustava omejuje skupno število mandatov. Morales je bil za predsednika predtem izvoljen trikrat oziroma dvakrat, če začnemo štetje po sprejetju sedanje ustave. Spor je vrhunec dosegel z na začetku omenjenimi protestnimi pohodi Moralesu zvestih sindikalistov na La Paz in poskusi aretacije Moralesa, zaradi česar se je zabarikadiral v lavki Enje. Marca, ko ni več računal na ponovni prevzem vodenja Masa, je začel ustanavljati novo stranko Evo Pueblo.
Pred volitvami se je od Masa odcepilo še tretje krilo, katerega vodstvo je prevzel Andronico Rodriguez, podpredsednik šestih federacij v času Moralesovega vladanja in predsednik senata v času vlade predsednika Arceja. V sporu med Moralesom in Arcejem se je pridružil evističnemu krilu gibanja za socializem in avgusta lani kandidiral na predsedniških volitvah. Rodriguez je pred volitvami ustanovil svojo stranko Ljudsko zavezništvo, ampak ni pridobil Moralesove podpore. Še huje, Morales ga je razglasil za izdajalca in skupaj s sindikati volivce pozval k oddaji neveljavnih glasovnic z namenom delegitimacije katerekoli naslednje vlade brez preganjenega Moralesa.
Neveljavnih je bilo na to 20% oddanih glasovnic, kar je približno 4-krat toliko kot na prejšnjih volitvah. Tako Rodriguez kot takratni notranji minister Eduardo del Castillo, ki je z Arcejevo podporo predstavljal stranko MAS, sta izpadla v prvem krogu. V drugem krogu novembra sta se pomerila dva desničarja, Jorge Quiroga in končni zmagovalec Rodrigo Paz.
Po volitvah se je Arce, ki je od kandidature odstopil, umaknil iz politike in ponovno začel predavati na ekonomski fakulteti Universidad Mayor de San Andres. Toda zaporna kazen po nastopu nove vlade grozi tudi njemu, in sicer 6 let zaradi poneverbe javnih sredstev. Glede na obtožnico, ki jo je vložilo generalno državno tožilstvo, si je Arce med letoma 2006 in 2019 kot minister prisvajal sredstva iz sklada za razvoj staroselskih kmetov in porabljal denar za osebne potrebe. Za razliko od Moralesa se je že znašel v priporu. Policija ga je aretirala v prvi polovici decembra.
Vladavina političnega instrumenta sindikatov kokalirosov se je tako končala. Nad ruševinami razpadle stranke se je uspela vlada krščansko-demokratskega Rodriga Paza. Ta vlada, za razliko od predhodnice, ne vključuje nobenih predstavnikov staroselskih organizacij ali kmečkih in delavskih sindikatov. Poleg drugih dejanj udinjenja Združenim državam, kot je ponovna vzpostavitev diplomatskih odnosov z Izraelom prekinjenih leta 2023, je izvedla tudi obrat v politiki do koke. Kmalu po nastopu je vlada v državo ponovno povabila ameriški urad za boj proti drogam, s čimer neposredno napada interese kokalirosov. Droni in helikopteri ameriške agencije so januarja začeli preletavati Čapare.
Ministrstvo za družbeno zaščito in kontrolirane substance je klicanje ameriškega urada, ki ima v Boliviji krvavo preteklost, upravičilo s trditvijo, da je več kot 90% koke pridelane v Čaparu, namenjene proizvodnji kokaina. Nelegalna produkcija kokaina v Čaparu je v zadnjih 10 letih sicer narasla in predstavlja 15% svetovne proizvodnje kokaina. To je po različnih ocenah med 140 milijonov in 312 milijonov gramov kokaina na leto. Po mnenju sogovorca je obrat v nelegalno proizvodnjo kokaina posledica povečevanja nezaupanja v vlado od Arcejevega predsedovanja. DAA lahko razmere le poslabša.
Since 2019, coca growing has massively expanded basically because the growers have lost trust in the state, so they don't really see the point in honoring these commitments any longer. So you've kind of got expanding coca cultivation in the region. And as regards to what Paz Piera will do, it's still uncertain. The big threat as the coca is here, I suppose, at the moment, is that he's courting the United States because he basically, out of necessity, because Bolivia's in a deep economic crisis. And so he's... Basically, it's highly likely that the Drug Enforcement Administration will return to Bolivia. They were expelled by Morales in 2008 on charges of sedition, sort of interfering in national politics, and he'll bring them back in. And I think the potential return of the DEA to Bolivia is potentially, you know, very negative step as far as the coca growers are concerned. The future looks very uncertain with the DEA in place and the potentially, who knows, the return of forced eradication.
Po propadu strank Gibanje za socializem in vrnitvi desnice na oblast, z njo pa vrnitvi ameriškega protikokainskega imperializma, se je Evo prisiljen vrniti k svojim sindikalističnim koreninam. Zdaj, po skoraj 20 letih vladavine svojega političnega instrumenta, kokalirosi z Moralesom na čelu za barikadami čakajo na protinapad kompradorske desnice. In iza barikad lahko v jeziku kečua še naprej usklikajo:
Kausačun koka, van jučun jankis. Živela koka, smrt jankijam.
Južno hemisfero je pripravil Matej. Tehnicirala je Robi, lektorirala je Mija, brali sva Primica in Živa.
Ne uđe.
Globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know.
Within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
We travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you'll see what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Poročamo o južni polovni. 3, 2, 1.